When does a Christian submit to authority? When should a Christian resist authority? Hello, I'm Alden Thompson, and welcome to the program. Our discussion today is on respect for authorities and a larger umbrella of religion in relationships. My conversation partners are again Dave Thomas, Dean of the School of Theology at Walla Walla College, and Aline Bauer, who is a visiting instructor in theology. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you,
Alden.
Now, let's dive into that. Are there any places where you can say absolutely the Christian should follow authority, and any places where you can say with absolute clarity that you should resist authority?
Well, I think you should absolutely follow authority when it is doing right.
And absolutely resist it when it's doing wrong, huh?
Well,
I think it's a bit scarier.
Yeah, but I think in some senses you have to do that.
Yeah.
Now, I think this is a very challenging issue, Alden. It's a very difficult issue, but whenever you talk about absolute obedience, I tremble.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think absolute obedience is warranted to any human personal institution.
And one of the scariest experiments sociologically was Stanley Milgram's experiment with the shocks, where he discovered that people were willing just to go up to what appeared to be maximum shock simply because they were told by a white-robed lab assistant that they had to do it.
That's
really, really scary. And this was post-Holocaust. People respond to authorities quite differently. And so authorities can be incredibly destructive.
Yeah.
And we see that a lot. I mean, you hear stories and...
Yeah. And see, I think that there are people who, you know, the existence of authority in human hands really easily produces corruption.
Mm-hmm.
That how many people there are who exploit their privileges as a person who has authority to make the lives of other people individual or to pursue something that's inappropriate.
What do you do then with Paul's instruction to the Romans, where he alludes to the fact, is it chapter 13, that,
mm-hmm.
Do what the authorities tell them to do, and certainly they were not living in the free society that we do, completely different.
This is where I think you have to be aware of all of Scripture, as I've often said, thinking of our Christians who were involved in the Nazi atrocities.
Mm-hmm.
They were caught between Revelation 13 and Romans 13.
Well, what about what's happening in Afghanistan? In the prison in Baghdad right now.
You know,
everybody's saying, well, they told me to do it. Ooh.
Yep,
mm-hmm.
That's exactly what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And people will feel good. I was following orders.
Yeah.
Right.
See, so, but to be able to resist authority, see, Romans 13 says you should submit to the higher powers.
Right.
Revelation 13 says if you do, you get the mark of the beast.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And see, life is lived in that tension between those two, and you can't just set up a tidy little formula.
Okay, so what help could we give our listeners and also ourselves to know which direction to go with that?
And see, I think your question raises some interesting issues, Aline, because we have to be able to have some information that will prevent us from being irresponsible to justifiable authority, but at the same time not go off, into this business. And I am very content with one ingredient being issues of conscience.
Mm-hmm.
That I think that as Christians, and I would say all human beings, have an element of conscience, and I would like to argue that even if your conscience is improperly informed, you still should not go against it.
There, in fact, there are two interesting books that came out of World War II, and it was an Adventist pastor that pointed this out to me. One, The Seventh Escape, where he vowed never to tell a lie.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And the Lord seems to have blessed him.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have Flee the Captor, where he told all kinds of lies, and the Lord seems to have blessed him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the crucial thing is your conscience may be warped,
right,
but you are obligated to follow your conscience.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I think that's terribly crucial.
And see, I think that just as we said a few weeks ago about not giving parents or other people unconditional obedience,
mm-hmm.
that we as human beings can never give authority unconditional obedience. That even God, I think, involves us. Come now, let us reason together.
Mm-hmm.
That there is a reasonable dynamic between human beings and God that authoritarian structures don't allow for. And I feel particularly tender toward people who live in authoritarian systems. You know, what would it be like, for example, to live in China today or in Albania, mm-hmm. which was known in times past to be the most repressive in terms of any kind of religious belief or conscience? I think we have to be careful how we talk about authority and the people and what people do under those kind of things. I mean, you want to go underground, it seems like, and just tunnel to the next zone where there is not an authoritarian mm-hmm. structure.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think of, for instance, in the communistic countries where parents were faced with a choice, either sending their children to school on Sabbath or losing them completely.
Yeah, right. Horrible choice.
It's just a terrible choice. Right. See. And when you look at the choices which people face in a totalitarian regime, you can't really predict where it will bend. I think of, for instance, David Lynn, who chose when he was in the internment camp to do whatever his captors told him to do, because he felt that he was no longer a free person. So he would do things on Sabbath and so on that he normally wouldn't do, but he did it because he was in an authoritarian structure. His wife, by contrast, resisted, and she took a terrible beating physically in a variety of ways. Now, after the war, you know, he lives a terrible guilt because he saved his body by simply doing what he was told, and she resisted. So I don't know if there are any easy answers, because just a lot of factors come into these kinds of discussions.
Yeah.
Now, a couple of biblical examples, and these are kind of curious. Our lesson guide cited both Joseph and Daniel as people who were actively involved in government. Problem is, both of those were slaves or captives. So is that a help to us as to whether or not we ought to become actively involved in government? Politicians as civil servants today? Or do those examples not help us?
Well, we see in both the life of Joseph and Daniel certainly success stories, and the fact that God remained God to them, and it doesn't feel like they got so involved with politics or themselves that they toppled over with that. And I've wondered if the fact that they came from the background of slavery gave them that extra edge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I don't think you can classify Daniel in the same category as Joseph. Joseph certainly began in slavery, but my understanding of Daniel is that he was a prince who was taken captive, and the Babylonians had a procedure whereby they would create a brain trust in Babylon by bringing the smart young people there. So I don't think, you know, while Daniel was a foreigner, maybe to call him a foreigner is better than to call him a slave.
He was certainly an exile. He wasn't.
Yeah, he was an exile, but he had
not
come
in the
there
dungeon,
and,
like
yeah,
Joseph.
Yeah,
right.
He had come to Babylon to associate with and become one of the king's advisors. Mm-hmm. See.
Well, there's another example while we're just multiplying things here to show how complex the world can be. Esther. Because Daniel, you know, he opened the windows, he didn't cover anything up, and the Lord seems to have honored him.
But although his experience was pretty difficult.
Oh, it was very difficult. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't want to spend the night with the lions either. But the point is that Esther didn't give a squeak. Until at the last moment, where she finally, in response to Mordecai's appeal, who knows whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this, then she let her identity be known. So.
You know what these stories sort of tell me is that I think sometimes we try to put God in a box, or we try to assume that this is always the way it is, and I think there's a broadness there that we don't really have an understanding of, that God can work through a multitude of situations and people, and that's encouraging to me.
That's true, but I also think there's something to be said. You know, I'm very admiring of Sir Thomas More, who was described as an individual who, you know, when they finally got down to where he kept himself, there was no more room for vacillation and compromise. And they found, as one person said, that inside the glove of velvet was a hand of iron. That he would not be moved. And I think that this is really the story of martyrs. But don't you think there comes a point where, even in a totalitarian regime, that if it gets down to the essence of your being and you're asked to compromise at the most essential level of your existence, that it is actually better to die?
Certainly.
Because to die in the honor of God is not the worst thing.
But it comes back again something to what you said earlier, Dave, this idea of absolute obedience, when you take that approach that you suggested, you are in fact deciding where and when you will draw the line.
Yeah.
It's by no means self-evident. Now, I've been intrigued and kind of amazed and, yes, appalled at some of the reaction to my use of the word casebook in Scripture, because many devout conservatives are alarmed at that phrase as over against codebook. But you see, codebook implies unthinking obedience.
Yeah.
You just follow code. Whereas casebook, I think, is terribly realistic to what we all face.
Yeah.
And whether you're in a totalitarian regime or in a democracy, you have to make the decision where you're going to draw the line.
That would just go along with these examples that you have just listed, Alden, because mm-hmm. they are cases and they responded differently to authority.
Mm-hmm. And see, what do Christians do about things like civil disobedience? I mean, is there ever an occasion where we as Christians should resist what a government or someone in authority? And you know, this, remember that even in church settings, there are people who are in authority. And the Bible is very clear that God has placed some of them there. They have a very legitimate function.
But it's also clear in the Bible that sometimes Peter has to withstand, or Paul has to withstand Peter to his face.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. There are times when people who have authority in the church or out of the church mm-hmm. misuse that.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, what then do we as Christians do? I think that's a very interesting question.
And again, couldn't we say that you cannot clarify that in advance? And there may be some social issues. Let me just take a very dangerous one in the United States. We have huge millions of people who have no health coverage.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yet they're very wealthy people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's interesting to me, though, that how some social issues are very acceptable in terms of resistance, like against tobacco or alcohol or you know.
Yeah.
But there are others that are highly taboo. And it's interesting to me, I think as Christians we need to be a little bit more thoughtful about our reactions to things.
I think we need to be more concerned about economic issues, because those are the ones that really hurt. When, as someone said, genuine morality simply doesn't function when there are no financial resources.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It just falls apart. You pulled with so many things. And I think that those of us who are adequately cared for financially ought to be much more concerned.
Yeah.
About in our own culture and around the world, where there's a great deal of loss.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what are we saying here, that the key ingredient in all of this is a sense of conscience?
Yes, and a conscience which is sensitized, hopefully, by the Spirit and by the reading of Scripture.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, not just conscience alone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
then don't violate what conscience is telling.
That's right. And it's amazing that some writers would say the Bible is a dangerous book, because it could touch your conscience in ways that you weren't planning on. So when it has to do with work, those are key issues which we all need to address. But thank you, Dave and Aline, for helping us in our discussion again today. Next week, we move out of the work environment to deal with more religious issues, and our topic will be Christ's Other Sheep. My thanks to Jeremy Erland, our program engineer, and to all of you for listening in. For Probe, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Probe, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla College and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you may call 509-527-2194 or email probe@wwc.edu. Join us again next week at the same time for Probe.